Tech of Sports, episode 44 for March 20th, 2013. Jason Straka, golf course architect. Tonight on the Tech of Sports, it's Jason Straka. Netcast Studio mobile apps are a great way to receive our content for your smart devices. There's an app for both iOS and Android. And don't forget the Stitcher radio app for all iOS devices and Android. Get Stitcher for free with your favorite Netcast Studio shows preloaded. Stitcher Radio, it's an award-winning provider of news and talk radio for your mobile phone and tablet. Stitcher, it's smart radio for your smartphone. And the Tech of Sports is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network at techpodcast.com. If it's tech, it's here. Tech of Sports is also a production of Netcast Studio at netcaststudio.com. We're live every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific at netcaststudio.com. Live, where you can join the chat room and listen to the show live. Welcome everyone tonight. It's March Madness here in the United States, but we're going to talk a little golf tonight. And golf is professional golf's heading into their first major of the year, the Masters. We're going to talk a little golf course design with a very noted golf course architect, Jason Straka. He's an industry leader in environmental golf course design. He has a formal education, but also rigorous professional training and considerable design experience. He produces a tradition of excellence with his golf course design. He's trained in many facets of golf course design with extensive design experience. He integrates golf courses both functionally and aesthetically within the surrounding environment that he's provided. His philosophy is confirmed by the diversity and success of the projects which he's been involved. Highly regarded courses, including Erin Hills, which will be host to the was host to the 2011 Amateur Championship, and the 2017 U.S. Open it will host, Little Mountain Country Club in Concord, Ohio, and then other golf courses in Canada and that have been played on the Nationwide Tour and other events. He's a member of the American Society of Golf Course Architects, serves on its Board of Governors, and as the chairperson of the ASGCA Education Committee. He's a member of the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America. And in 2010, Golf Magazine rated Straka as one of the most influential people in golf under the age of 40. And that kind of gives away your age a little there, Jason. Appreciate you joining us. And we'll talk about you and your firm, Fry Straka, tonight. And we'll have a good time.
Wow, Rick, that's quite an introduction. I'm not sure winded. Giving me that type of introduction. So, but it's a pleasure to be on. Thank you.
I'm winded. I thought we were just going to say you were a senator at some point or ran for president, too.
I might be able to run for Senate now after that intro.
Wow. Yeah. Well, great to have you anyway. And talk about maybe your younger years real quick. And when did you realize you wanted to design championship golf courses? Did you kind of sit around doodling in school different golf course holes? And I have a friend, actually, who's a construction engineer. And his goal through high school and college was to get into golf course, building golf courses and golf course design. And he used to doodle little 18 holes of golf courses given a little plot of land. And he is in construction these days, but he's building water treatment plants, not golf courses. So how did you get that inspiration and where did that come from?
You know, I've always enjoyed the outdoors, spending time outside. I grew up hunting, fishing, camping, and all those good things, and was introduced to the game of golf when I was really young, about 6 years old, I guess it was. And my entire family, extended family, played a lot of golf. So aunts, uncles, cousins. And so the game brought us very close together. And so I've always had a passion just for the game of golf. Couple that with, you know, loving to be outdoors and wanting to have a job where I could spend a lot of time outside. And then I had a great affinity for architecture, many kinds, you know, not only building architecture, but landscape architecture. And so just sort of all those things culminated together, and lo and behold, they wrapped up nicely into the field of golf course design. So it takes quite a few years, you know, there's a lot of folks that have asked to come, and they would even do free work for us, doctors, lawyers, you know, folks like your engineering friend. You said, "Guy, I'll come and work for you, but I'll even do it for free. I just want to design a golf course." And unfortunately, you learn that it's not that easy, not that simple, but it sure is a lot of fun.
Sure. And you're a busy guy. You've got a bunch of projects that are currently ongoing. How does that affect your golf game, and how are you shooting these days? I know winter's just getting over where you are in Ohio, but how's your game looking?
What game? I don't get to play that much, to be honest. Matter of fact, I think everybody who ends up in the golf industry quickly realizes that they're probably some of the folks that play the least amount of golf. So it's, gosh, I don't get to play nearly as much as I would like. The times I do get to play anymore, where I've got a younger son whom I've introduced to golf when he was very young. And now he's, middle school. And so the times I do play are with him. But I mean, truly, for the most part, the golf courses that I see are in some sort of construction phase. So, and that's okay too. You know, I'll take what I can get, but my scoring game anyway, certainly suffers.
Well, that's good. You realize that golf is a family sport, and most people, when they get away, they like to play golf. You sometimes need to get away from golf probably. So it's a little ironic. This is the show here is called The Tech of Sport. So just kind of get curious about some of the technology you use in a golf course design, maybe initially at the infancy of a golf course, and then as the process progresses, what kind of technology is in your bag or in your office that you use on a frequent basis?
Wow, that's a great question, and it really ties into the show well, because there are so many facets to my everyday professional life it changes every day due to technology. Rick, and I'll give you a couple of, I guess, quick examples, and then we talk about them. But, one, just in how we do business, first off, has changed quite a bit. In the past, if we were working in places like China or Southeast Asia, we would do drawings and we would have to print them and roll them up in a FedEx tube and then ship them off. And it would take 2 weeks to get there. And then by the time they'd get them and review them and send us back comments, that all of a sudden that one review process might take almost an entire month. You know, anymore now, it's just that things are done on computer or can be scanned in and get there instantaneously. So it speeds up the process, no doubt. Also puts a lot of pressure on all the professionals involved, just because now clients demand that you answer your emails and that you get things to them, rapidly. So that's, again, there's the good and the bad. It's sort of the, today's luxury becomes tomorrow's necessity. And boy, has that ever rang true in golf. And then you even just take a look at the conditioning side of things and how much golf courses have improved in their conditioning over the past few decades. This time of year, Rick, everybody looks or watches the old Masters videos. Everybody's getting pumped up, right, for the first major. And it's funny, though, because you watch the Arnold Palmers and some of the older guys, putting on the famous Augusta greens, and it looks like they have to take half of a backswing, to wrap a ball across the green when they were putting. And, nowadays you just touch it and you hardly can keep it on the green. Well, that's all due to maintenance technology, and which changes literally every year. So, and then environmental perspectives, we're so much into the global positioning satellites and how we measure things environmentally on golf courses. It really changes just their entire business and entire game year to year. It's quite amazing.
Yeah, we'll talk about the environmental factors here in a second, but as far as the actual drawings or the initial sketching of a course, do you get inspiration at a restaurant and you start drawing something on a napkin, or do you carry a pad and paper with you, or an iPad, and then does it get transferred to a CAD program of some sort, or a proprietary program you have? Take us through that initial process and how technical it is now.
Well, it's golf design. It's the placement of bunkers and what the green contours are. That's sort of the, ironically, that's almost sort of the window dressing anymore. So much of what we do on a daily basis does tie back into the planning and environmental aspects of it. And it's unbelievable how these golf course sites get micromanaged now. So the vast majority of time spent for me anymore is actually in studying the characteristics of a particular piece of land. So, taking water samples and looking at the water quality data, studying the topography. And again, all these things get measured now via different types of technology. And so when that information comes into our computer systems, we spend a great deal of time interpreting what that data means, means to the environment. And then when we place a golf course on it or propose a golf course, how do we do that without disrupting the land, as much as we possibly can? So an inspiration comes from a lot of different places, comes from classic golf courses to some of the new courses that my colleagues have designed. I incessantly, and anymore, everybody's got an iPhone or an Android phone, and I take hundreds of pictures of golf holes and golf courses when I'm out, looking at other projects, and you use those as inspiration as well. I'm not so sure that there's anything that's new. It's just sort of adaptations of things that have been done, in the past hundreds of years.
Yeah, last question on this. So when they give you a plot of land to work with, you're a designer and architect, but are you also a part consultant too? That you're given a plot of land and the owners say we want four par threes, four par fives, and the rest par fours, and then you look at it and you do your magic and you say we can't get four par fives on this course. You can have two. Do you sometimes have to go back to an outfit, an organization, an owner, and say this is probably the best what we can do, and do they listen to you, or do you not even give that advice to them?
No, well, it's our responsibility to give them the good, the bad, and the ugly, and sometimes we have to do all of that. So and sometimes they don't want to hear it, but it's necessary. And so you're absolutely right. I mean, we do go back and we'll say, well, gosh, you've created what we call as a program list. That means a wish list, or if you will. And, sometimes you can't fit everything on, on the site that's on their wish list. And at that point, you have to lead them through, prioritization of their goals and say, OK, what's most important? What's, to you and to the project? And then those are the things that get implemented. So you're exactly right. I mean, we do a lot of that.
And we're with Jason Strack here from Fry Strack at one of the best golf course design firms in the world. And it's great talking with Jason. And let's talk about the environmentally friendly courses subject here for a second. And what does that encompass? Does that encompass making sure, there's enough trees on a land, the land isn't disturbed? If it's you probably run into, I don't know if they call them covenants or different factors where you can't change certain things on plots of land, or if they're in a historic area, maybe. I'm sure you have all sorts of little things that creep up like that, kind of like when somebody's building a house, but you're doing it on a much bigger scale. And just talk about how environmentally friendly and maybe a funny story from that that you can look back on. Maybe it wasn't funny then, but it's funny now.
Yeah, there's a few of
that. My bad.
Yeah, it's environmental golf course design is a process, really, as much as it is an end product. And so, it's not necessarily just trees, although trees could become a part of it if it's in the right type of climate or environment. But really, golf design to me means using least amount of water, pesticides, fertilizers, and fossil fuels than a lot of other golf courses would. And so a lot of that comes into disturbing the land as least that you can while still providing a good golf course, picking the right types of turf grasses that are drought tolerant and disease resistant and wear tolerant, if you will, not only protecting but also enhancing water quality. And that could be surface water quality or groundwater quality. It's improving animal and plant habitat, not only improving it, but also protecting it if there is a delicate species which live on site. So it's really a culmination of all of those things. And yet, you're going to have this living, breathing golf course that's out there and it's, with the intention that it's going to make money, or at least most cases. And fulfill whatever our clients' goals are. So, I mean, that really, truly what environmental golf course design is. It's been, Rick, it's been really cliche for a long, long time to say that everybody designs with the environment in mind. Well, what specifically does that mean? To me, it means a lot more than perhaps to some other folks.
Sure. I know that there's a small town. I'm in the Atlanta area, Jason, and there's a small town here called Cartersville, Georgia. And they were building a public golf course, and they wanted to have 18 holes. And there's a road going down the middle of the course. So there was going to be 9 holes on one side of the road and 9 holes on the other, until they realized that on the backside, the holes 10 through 18, that side of the road was going to back up to an ancient Indian burial ground. And all of a sudden, the people got in an uproar, and they didn't want a golf course backing up to the burial ground. So evidently, it turned into a 9-hole golf course.
And there's a few of those. That's why it's so important to do all of your homework up front. Little details which seem so little or trivial at the beginning of the planning process can turn into deal killers, just like that, that did. If somebody would have went out and you did their homework and figured out that there was that the Indian burial plots there beforehand, then they could have made different decisions before it was too late.
I'm sure you sat in on some city council meetings where people were screaming that they didn't want a golf course on it, and you were sitting there probably with your head buried in your hands probably.
Yeah, there was one in particular where. Fascinating, was actually in a community, and the community was really, really interested in having the golf, this golf course. And it's been built, and it's very successful and well known now. But the project, again, people were thrilled with the economic stimulus and that we were going to enhance, protect the environment. And until this one young lady had stood up in the middle of a town hearing or meeting, which was open to the community or the public, and proceeded to say that the golf course was going to kill all of the aquatic invertebrates that lived in several streams that ran through the golf course site, and that the chemicals that we were going to put out were going to kill those invertebrates, and then was it salmon and trout spawning habitat, and that the fish wouldn't have anything to eat, and because they didn't have anything to eat, they were going to starve, and then they wouldn't reproduce, and then all of the fishing in that area was going to be decimated. And of course, this area relied heavily on commercial and sport fishing, and so you can imagine the mayor just turning to me with this panicked look, saying, "Oh my gosh, what do I do now?" And so it was interesting, Rick. What had happened was that I vividly won't forget, was that we thanked her for her time, and we said, if you have supporting research, we would certainly like to see it, because that's news to us. And so, and we asked her to actually go get that research that she was quoting or citing and send it to the mayor to put on public record. And I explained to her that we'll do the same, that we've got plenty of research, that backs up university and independent research that backs up that golf courses are indeed good for the environment and then actually protect and enhance water quality. Sure. And I went back and I got something like, I'm going to get the number wrong now, but it was something like 16 different peer-reviewed university articles, research articles, send them to the mayor, they put them on file, and she sent nothing. Sure. Nothing. So what happens a lot of times is that people use fear in these instances just to try and quash some of these projects.
Yeah, people are passionate, and you can't fault them for that. But you've done it enough. You got your ducks in a row, and you move on. But just sit back for a second, Jason, and we'll take a break here for our Amazon.com ad, and just let our listeners know if they're doing any shopping on Amazon in the coming months. Father's Day coming up, Mother's Day, Easter, birthdays, weddings. You can use the affiliate link here at the studio, netcaststudio.com/Amazon, for any of your needs. And there's no extra cost to you, and it helps support the studio and the variety of shows that it offers. And that link, again, is netcaststudio.com/Amazon. And just use that when you're going to do your shopping on Amazon, and everyone makes out on that. It helps the studio, and it helps you as well. So, Jason, we're back here, and just kind of wanted to ask you maybe a little funny question. I don't know if you're aware that Golf Digest currently has a contest out where it's design a par 3 hole, and you can win $3,000. I don't know if you're eligible for this, if you know about it, but I can put my name on it if you kind of help me with that design a par 3 hole contest, and I'll take you out to dinner if we win.
Yeah, the The funny thing about that is that Ron Witten, who's the architectural editor for Golf Digest, is actually a good friend of mine. And so we were just at an event about three, 4 weeks ago. And he was flipping through some slides, giving this presentation on the very first armchair architects contest that they had run.
Bobby, it was hysterical.
Yeah, and all of us professionals are not eligible, but there were so many of us that actually went ahead and put in a design under a pen name. and it became the funny thing was he just would go through and you'd try and figure out who did what. And I'll be darned, he was pretty good at actually telling, who submitted something. It was either a little too good or, something was not quite right with it. But he figured out a lot of them, where they came from.
So I didn't see your name as a judge, though, Jason, but I guess you're not eligible. So maybe I'll send mine over to you to look at before I send it in.
There you go. There's a good idea. I'll do a critique. I'll help you.
It's a great contest, and they do a good job with that. And I'm sure they get a ton of entries because everybody thinks they can design the ultimate golf hole, I guess.
You know what? We did help out one year with judge them. And I tell you what, we just got so many. And our entire office was just flooded with entries. And we just had to sort. I mean, it's unbelievable to try and sort through them. But it's fascinating. You do get some really, really good entries. You also get some ones, too, that are pretty crazy and they're great to look at, pretty wild. It'd be maybe interesting to build them and have them operational for a day or two, but that's probably about it.
Yeah, an island green submitted by a person from Alabama, probably with the Crimson Tide logo as the island green, and you probably see all sorts of things like that.
Well, being a Buckeye up here, that's that would be automatically out the door.
So. I didn't want to have you lose your credibility there by saying that. So you said it, not me. And I guess another thing that is really big are golf video games and how realistic they are. And I play the Tiger Woods EA Sports games, and the courses are so realistic down to the undulations in the green and the specific trees in certain places and that type of thing. Do you ever go and do you play the video games at all? Do you look at them maybe for inspiration, or you just kind of look at them and marvel? Or have you ever been contacted to be a consultant on maybe a course that you've worked on for a video game?
Yeah, well, my son plays them, that's for sure.
I bet.
But I try and peel away from them. But what's really popular, and particularly in northern Ohio, where I'm originally from, are the big screens where you're hitting the balls into the screen and you actually are playing these famous golf courses. Believe it or not, they've actually put them in now sports pubs and bars, and they run leagues with them.
Yep.
So you probably don't have that in Atlanta, but I tell you, in Cleveland they do.
We have a Dave and Buster's here, which is a big arcade adult video type place, and they have the realistic simulators in there. And I also saw a couple really neat ones at the PGA merchandise show that are so realistic it's scary.
Yeah, that's right. You're exactly right. And they're fun training tools as well, because they're of course you're doing it in club fitting and those types of things as well, but it makes it a heck of a lot of fun to play that. I've got a few friends that really enjoy that. They always like to bust my chops, and they want to go and play my golf courses. And when are you going to have them on a video game so we can go play them?
I bet.
I said, well, someday.
Someday is right. And I guess we'll kind of talk about here maybe a couple of the famous, your favorite courses that you didn't design, and kind of what maybe is your golf course designers have a certain trademark, whether it's Pete Dye and railroad ties. Is there some distinguishing feature that is found on all your courses?
Yeah, answer first question. Some of my favorite courses, international, my favorite course is Lahinch, which is on the western coast of Ireland. I have a great affinity for Lynx golf. I really enjoy it and love it. It's not a lot of just not a type of golf course that a lot of Americans get to play. You're starting to see some of that now in places like Bandon Dunes, or places like Sand Hills, which is ironically in the middle of the country and isn't true Lynx Lynn, but it sure plays that way. and of course our own Aaron Hills. But it becomes much more of a ground game, and you know the ball bounces and rolls, and you get all sorts of funny hops and skips and bumps. But you're not only having to read what's going to happen when you hit the ball, but once the ball lands, you know what it's going to do and where it's going to run to. And so it just adds an entirely different element to golf than what most Americans are used to playing. So LaHinch, and probably also for that reason, I really enjoy Shinnecock because it does have a lot of those types of elements to it.
And what's your little trademark feature that maybe is on each course?
My course is to be honest, I like and I'm proud that so many of them are different, quite honestly. You always like to have courses that the vast majority of people find playable and can go out and enjoy. And so I'd say that would be one trait. Of course, the environmental sensitivity is another one. You know, but look wise, there's no Pete Dye railroad ties or any mounding or some sort of trait like that. Most designers, it's ironic because of course I know Pete and Alice well and played many of their golf courses. Matter of fact, I grew up actually working on one of their golf courses that was built in the early 1970s, and it didn't have a single railroad tie on it. And so, I think what happens is a lot of designers get tagged with that, but in reality, if you really study them, it's not quite as prevalent as you might think. Sure. Interesting story is, for example, I know how many times I get told of Donald Ross greens, and everybody has in their mind that Pinehurst number 2 are these famous Donald Ross turtleback greens. But the reality is that he didn't design them that way. They were, that couldn't be farthest from the truth. So, Donald Ross greens were as varied as anybody's, but because of maintenance practices, those greens became turtlebacked, and lo and behold, he sort of got tagged with that moniker, if you will.
Yeah, interesting. And we're wrapping up here with Jason Straka from Fry Straka. Jason, give the listeners here a little plug for your company. How they can find out more about what you guys do, what you're currently working on, and if they have a question, how can they contact you?
Yeah, you bet. Easiest way is just to go to our website, which is www.frystraka.com. Our office lines, whether it's international or whether it's here back in the U.S., is there, as well as emails. Certainly keep an eye out for the name as 2017 approaches. For the U.S. Open at Aaron Hills, obviously there'll be lots and lots of press that'll be surrounding that. And we've got some people like to play a little resort golf. We've got a new project opening up for the famous Camelback Inn in Arizona, and that'll be online later this year. So if folks venture down to the Southwest, have a stop in there and check out some of our newer work.
And Aaron Hills is already getting a lot of press. And as someone who grew up in Wisconsin, it's an amazing course, and it's going to be really neat to see how the pros fare on that in 2017. And what's one thing maybe we should look for on that course it's still 4 years away when that comes up, Jason?
Well, right now they're saying, when I say the USGA is saying it's going to play as the longest course in U.S. Yep. Open history. Although what would be fascinating is to see really, because of how firm and fast and that link sort of play that I mentioned, to see what types of shots they hit into those greens. Because even though it's going to be a tremendously long course, I don't think it's necessarily going to play that long. And so it'll be, again, fascinating to watch how the guys not only handle the length, but also handle the ground contours.
So even par is going to be a good score on that course, you think?
No, I think that USGA will pretty much set up any course under their wing for the Open that way. But, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think so, too. And, Jason, as we wrap up, I always ask all my guests one last question. What's the one piece of technology that you can't live without these days?
I guess got to be my iPhone.
That's what most people give that as the answer. I thought maybe you would have something a little more unique than that.
No, heavens no. I've got my clients pretty much demand that I'm available 24/7. As much as it drives my wife crazy when I'm home with incessant email noise, but it's that's the luxury that you can't live without anymore.
It is, and I guess it's a good thing that people are calling you. That shows you're good at what you do and you're staying busy.
That's right. Yeah, I'll always take that.
And Jason, give one more plug for your website there, Freistreicher. How can they look at your website?
Again, it's www.freistreicher.com. Feel free. There's lots of pictures there, lots of photographs, information, awards lists, current media. So everybody go out and have a look.
Great stuff, Jason. Appreciate you coming on. Great guest. And we can't wait until 2017. You probably feel the same way.
Me too. Yeah, that's right. I'm looking forward to it. And I really thank you for having me on. I enjoyed it.
Sure. Enjoyed it very much. And just want to let all the listeners know that Netcast Studio has many other shows which may be of interest. And you can head over to netcaststudio.com and check out all the shows that are available. And also a mention of the new podcast and internet broadcast directory that has been set up at Netcast Studio. It's Two Thumbs Up Media. And you can check that out at twothumbsupmedia.com. And a lot of great benefits, a lot of great shows there, new audio, video, and internet streaming content. It's you could spend all day and all night checking out all the new shows on there. So Two Thumbs Up Media, check that out. And Jason, thanks for coming on. And just let the listeners know they've been listening to the Tech of Sports podcast, a Netcast Studio production.